Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Danny Cannell, back to throw, first and 10, the pass is tight end.
And Raja Bell.
Bell has got tackling it. 22 to Raja.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Raja Bell. It is Friday. March Madness has officially started. I forgot how crazy it is, and I don't know why, but it does feel like the best time of year when March Madness tips off. Like, the games start early, people are at work, putting it online, watching multiple TVs, you got multiple screens. It is a fantastic time of year.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I wasn't wrapped up in it. I mean, we were doing our brackets, my kids and I, but I wasn't like full-fledged March Madness mode, and then it hit. And I was like glued to the couch while my kids were at school trying to figure out, you know, how many first round games I was going to lose. It was pretty cool. And then all hell broke loose last night. And it just, I woke up this morning and I'm effed. My whole, it's over. Like, it started, it was exciting, and now it's over. I'm out.
See, I think you're giving up too early, though, because I saw a stat that I think only 2% of brackets are intact, like perfect still. Like, everybody has that perception of, oh, my bracket is screwed, but everybody's in the same boat, so yeah. There's still hope for
unless
you.
Unless you had Arizona playing in the championship game, and then you're effed.
Yeah, then you're pretty much screwed.
Right.
You know what I need to do? I need to corrupt you a little bit, because what makes March Madness even more fun, and this is the idea, you probably shouldn't listen to this advice, but it's gambling. Right. Like, I should get you to open an account and just put a little bit in it, just a little funny money, like just something for fun, just to get you a little flavor, because it makes things so much more interesting. And because, like, who cares when you're watching, you know, Texas Tech versus Stephen F. Austin? Like, who cares about that game unless you've got something on it? It makes things that much more interesting when it plays out. Side note, it was an awful day for me, and I did something you're never supposed to do in gambling, because I lost early. I had Oklahoma. I had Davidson. And then my account's getting low, so I'm like, screw it. I'm going to go all in on Bama. And Bama came through for me, which we're going to get to that. We're going to do a recap of the whole tournament. Let's get it started right now, because one of the biggest stunners until last night late was your Miami Hurricanes, Raja. Let's have a listen.
One timeout, they don't take it.
Oh, he got it! Oh, he got the buzzer! And the Ramblers are moving on!
Look, just for a little clarity here, right? So we can let everybody understand. I am a Hurricane as it pertains to football.
Oh!
Basketball, there is no way I can be a Hurricane. I played for FIU. We didn't have football at the time, so I was allowed to root for the Hurricanes, right? There was no football program. So I care less about the Miami basketball program other than I had them going into the Sweet 16. I mean, that screwed me also. But, yeah, that's a tough beat. And, you know, they lost the kid Brown. Is it Bruce Brown? He was supposed to be a top 20 pick, and Lonnie Walker, top 20 pick. Losing him, he was the heart and soul. Lonnie's a freshman. That really hurt them midway through ACC play. But they just didn't, you know, look, Loyola's a tough team. My buddy Kenny Kelly called it. They went into Florida and beat Florida earlier in the season. They're really, really good defensively. But Larrañaga, as good as he has underperformed, and his teams have in tournaments. Like, I should have known that. That's my bad.
So I was looking at it. I'm like, who the heck is Loyola Chicago? Didn't even, like, never heard of this program. Was wondering what's going on. I had Miami pencil to make a pretty deep run. And then I'm looking for superstars from the game, and it wasn't even a player. It was Sister Jean.
And when we were in the locker room ahead of the game, we just knew that we would do this. Our team is so great, and they don't care who makes the points as long as we win the game. And I said, we want to win get the big W up there, and we did.
So she's got a higher, she's got God on speed dial, ready to dial up Loyola Chicago for a deep run. I get a little bit, and look, I'm a Christian. I'm pretty open about my faith, but I get a little bit nervous when people like Sister Jean start dialing up the W's with God.
Yeah.
Because does he really care who wins?
Hope. I mean, he's got some bigger stuff going on than worried about if University of Illinois Chicago beats Miami.
Exactly. And then do you go to Sister Jean after they get bounced from the tournament and see what the prayer was that game?
Right.
No, but it was pretty funny. She was all like, she most like the lead with highlights was not the team. It was Sister Jean, because she is like a cute old nun. Like she's the official mascot. So all right, so that was one loss, but it wasn't the biggest upset of the tournament so far. That was Arizona, and Arizona really was never in the game with Buffalo. It was ugly. They end up getting beat by 21 points, 89-68. It was brutal, and this blew up. Talk about blowing up brackets. This one blew up a ton of people's brackets. I did multiple brackets. I don't know if you did, Raja. If you just did one, I did multiple. In one of them, I did have Arizona in the Final Four, so that one is done. But fortunately for our purposes, for this podcast, I did not. But I think it's ugly. I think all the distractions caught up to him. Sean Miller, I think now it's an easier exit from the program. If there is more controversy, they can say, well, you underperformed. DeAndre Ayton had 14. He was 6-13. He was good, but clearly there's not enough around him. And this is an ugly loss for not only for Arizona, but the Pac-12.
Yeah, I think it speaks volumes, or lack thereof, if you will, about the Pac-12 this year. I mean, they've got no teams left in the field. That's pretty pathetic. The Arizona situation, I watched the first 15 minutes of that game before I fell asleep. But let's be clear, like Buffalo came to play. Buffalo was, and they're a good team. They had kids out there that weren't afraid. They were aggressive. When you play a team like an Arizona or a Duke or a Kansas and you're a mid-level program, you can't come out there with any kind of fear in your heart. It has to be an aggressive, I'm taking the fight to you mentality for the whole game. They shot 15 of 33s, and I believe Arizona was 2 for 18. So not only do you have to take the fight to them, but you have to be on your game, and you have to catch one of those guys slipping. You're talking about DeAndre Ayton, who could be a top 3 pick. Alonzo Trier is probably a first-round talent also. I don't know that you could say that about anybody on Buffalo, but they brought the fight to Arizona. Arizona was sleepwalking. It was a really pathetic performance. I think it was a 2-point game at half, and then there's no excuse for getting drilled by 20 if you're Arizona. But Buffalo did what you have to do if you're one of those mid-major programs, and Arizona just was not ready to play. And Sean Miller, look, I'm not a college basketball coach, and so I'm not trying to throw people under the bus all day today. But when your team's 2 out of the last 3 years, you've had the teams like he's had, the pros like he's had, and you're not in the Sweet 16 2 out of the last 3 years. Has he been what's the stat? Is it out before the round of 32 in 2 of the last 3 years? That's not very good. That's not good, and it's not just on the kids.
That's an ugly loss. That's one that's going to stick with him for a while. And it's funny you say that, because everybody was picking Arizona. They were a darling for the tournament. A lot of people had them deep. So I thought you're right. Like, they did overlook Buffalo. I think all they thought they had to do was show up. And I thought it was interesting, because I was watching Ohio State, and they were playing South Dakota State. And they were in a dogfight. They ended up winning. They ended up pulling away late. I was dialed into it because I had the Jackrabbits. No, just side note. But when Chris Holtmann was talked to after the game, they interviewed him on the court, and he said, I just want to thank all the professionals, out there, the broadcasters, analysts, who said we were going to get beaten this round. He's like, my players heard it. He's like, and I think he's right. Like, it's a better situation to be in as a coach when everybody's picking your team to lose, because it'll piss them off and they don't want to. And so they kind of take pride in it, as opposed to Arizona. You come up there and you show up, and they think they can just show up and they'll beat Buffalo, and it ends up haunting them. So I think sometimes it's better if analysts and, people on TV are questioning you for your run in the the tournament. Like, you'd rather have that situation as opposed to what we saw with Arizona.
I'd like to give an extra special shout out to Danny Cannell.
Yes, I have been used there. That's when Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern, before their bowl game, where I had 40 points on them getting beat, which was the max you could put on them. Basically, I thought they were the worst team in the bowls, and I was wrong, and he was right, which was good. So he owes me dinner for that, for getting their bowl game win. next up, again, another loser for me personally. This one hurt, but I don't think it hurt as bad as it did for Lon Kruger in Oklahoma. It was – I don't know if you saw this game. So I was dialed into this game. It was on, like, during the day. It was one of the early games, 12:30 tip. Watched it very closely. Trae Young, to me, had a typical Trae Young game. But – in saying that, he has to be more aware. I get that he's a player who's taken a lot of threes this season, but they get the game to overtime versus Rhode Island, and they're back and forth. And they had a 7-point lead at one time, Oklahoma did. And Rhode Island was hanging around. They ended up taking the lead late, but it went to overtime. In overtime, two possessions, Oklahoma had the lead, like a one-point lead, and they crossed midcourt. And I am not lying, Rajat. These were 35 to 40-foot three-pointers. He was on the logo.
Yeah, I saw him.
Am I crazy to think those are some of the worst baskets, the worst attempts you've ever seen?
Yeah, you are, because his teammates suck.
Come on.
No, dude, look. Hey, look, I don't love a no-pass 30-foot three unless you can make no-pass 30-foot threes. And I agree with you in one regard. Like, two of them in a row or two and three possessions is a lot. Shooting one of them up one, I don't mind. Like, you hit that, you're up four. And if you have capable weapons around you, and I've watched you through two halves give the ball up and people make plays and get buckets, then I will tell you to pass the ball. But what I watched was a kid in the first half, you know, start off the game pretty hot and then start facilitating, and people were making plays because he was spoon feeding people. He was getting them the ball right at the rim or right where they wanted it. And then the defense changed from Rhode Island just a little bit, and he'd have to get off of the ball before he could make a play for a teammate. When that started happening, the rest of that team made absolute messes. They looked like babies sitting at their little like tables eating food. It was a mess. It was an absolute like their food. It was just NCAA basketball players shouldn't make messes like that. And so I was saying during the game, like, if this kid doesn't start playing the way he played earlier in the season, they're not even going to have a chance. And he did. It just wasn't like 40-foot bombs. He was going to the rack. But without him doing that, they just aren't good enough. And it, you know, I wanted to be on your side a little bit with it because I agree, like, to play in the pro game, you know, when you have weaponry around you, you can't do that. Like, you can't come down and just start squeezing from all over the place and have guys, you know, like J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver and you name it,
yeah,
sitting over there like, dude, what are you doing? But in the absence of that, with the roster that he has, he had to do that, or they did not have a fighting chance in the game.
I thought, so I'm still going to push back a little bit. Mm-hmm. There was one he took, it was like 4 seconds into the shot clock.
Yep.
And then I'm with you because he's carried his team all year long. Like, I don't want to knock him as a player because I like watching him play, and I think he is going to be a ton of fun to watch. I think he is a really good shooter. I just thought he made a couple bad shots. But what brought them back and got them to overtime was him driving and was him dishing or him getting fouled and getting to the free throw line and knocking down his free throws. So I didn't love the last two shots, but I get it's what carried them all season. Like, they've lived or died with Trae Young.
And here's the problem with that, though. And I agree with you. Like, when he started scoring, it was going to the rack, but they were double teaming him off of every pick and roll. And Lon Kruger's offense was all pick and roll, dribble, handoff. And so it was introducing a secondary defender like every time. A guy that's his size, a freshman, you can't do that for 45 minutes or 44 minutes with the overtime. He's exhausted. Like, he hasn't come off the court. He's got the responsibility to handle the ball every play. It just wasn't – the offense didn't help. It puts him in a position to kind of have to do that sometimes.
All right, you know who my favorite team in the tournament is?
Who's that?
Alabama, baby. Roll Tide, roll.
I just set myself up.
And I like them going in. Like, I like them going in because of Colin Sexton. I think they're a fun team to watch. I think they play with a lot of energy. I think he's a dynamic player. Similar to Trae Young, not the best outside shooter, quite as good as him, but he does put up some points. But they also came up big for me late and saved my bankroll in the tournament, coming up with impressive. It was a fun game to watch, too, with Virginia Tech. It was back and forth. It was tight to the finish. I have them beating Villanova, but it was one of those ones where I was looking for an upset in my bracket. I'm not going to go put money. I'm not doubling down on the bank account on that one just yet. Do you think I should? Or do you think I'd be crazy to do that?
I think that I think you'd be crazy to do it because Villanova's. I got Villanova winning it, but Alabama's one of those teams. Like, they got Avery Johnson. He was a coach of the year in the NBA, a great pro. I mean, I watched them play. They've got a bunch of athletes, a bunch of guys that can get up, get after you, switch defensively, and still really not be in a mismatch. They're strong. The problem with them becomes offensively at times. They don't shoot the ball great. A lot of them like to attack the basket. Like, they play off the bounce. And so what they've done as of late is make shots. If they don't make shots, you know, they're in trouble. But you could say that for any team. If Villanova doesn't make shots, like you're gonna be in trouble. So they are scary in that regard. Is that they're athletically gifted enough that when you put them out there on the court, they're never in a mismatch. You know, they're always an upper level echelon athletic team, and it becomes about whether they can knock down some shots from the perimeter if everything they have to get comes at the basket. That's a hard way to live in the NCAA tournament.
Let me ask you something, because I was watching the tournament. And I don't watch a lot of regular season basketball. I'll watch some of the bigger games. I'll watch, you know, I watched Trae Young a couple times. I watched Carolina Duke. I watched the rivalry games, but I'm not watching two games a night. I thought the quality of basketball was really bad. Like, I thought there was some bad shooting. Like, people don't knock down open shots in college basketball. Are you with me on that? Like, when you watch, do you ever get frustrated with college basketball and say, man, I wish they were better, or I wish it was more fundamentally sound, or... like, what are you thinking when you're watching the college game?
Yeah, there are times when I watch. But overall, I thought it was all right. But there are times when I'm watching and I'm watching the offenses that guys are running. And I'm like, why would you run that? Like, you run offense to put somebody in an advantageous position to score the ball. And I watch some of these teams run offense, and they're basically like ships passing in the night until one guy gets it and goes one-on-one. And my question is, like, why run anything? Like, why, you know what I mean? Like, just space the floor and let him go to work. And so that's frustrating to me at times. But the overall skill level from some of the kids, I actually found myself watching the other day and saying, man, like, a lot of these kids are really, really good with the ball. And it kind of speaks to where we are with basketball. I don't want to hijack the conversation, but everybody now at the youth age puts an emphasis, and I do it too, I'm guilty of it. Like, everyone wants to teach kids how to handle the ball, how to make plays off the bounce, how to do this, how to do that. It's what you see guys in the NBA that are celebrated doing. It's what you see James Harden doing. It's what Kyrie can do. It's what Dame Lillard and Chris Paul can do. Very few people are out there just shooting the ball, you know? And so I think that's reflective of kind of what you're talking about. You know, there are a bunch of guys that can handle it, make plays off the bounce. Those kids from Rhode Island can all go get it off the bounce. But there are very few guys that can just stroke the ball. And that is a little absentee in this year's tournament field.
Danny, I retweeted something yesterday. I wanted you guys to let me know if you think this is fair. This is from Mark Deeks NBA on Twitter. And he said, just because college basketball players make it look harder doesn't mean they're playing harder. Is that fair, Raja?
Yeah, they're not playing any hard. Like, college basketball players aren't playing any harder
than
pros.
But that's the reputation that they get because it's in college. And that's what
I think they are. Just, you don't think they're playing harder?
No, I don't.
From start to finish?
No, I mean, dude.
You don't think NBA guys take it a little bit off in the first half?
I mean,
like, get buckets?
Because they're 80-some games and you're playing every night, you could make the argument. But overall, no, I don't. Because I played in college games, too, and it wasn't like from the jump ball I was frothing at the mouth. I mean, it was... you know, you ease your way into a game. Game gets tight. I agree with what he said. Like, you make it look harder. They're not as good. You know, some people make things look effortless because it's just second nature to them. Like, it's an easy thing for them. But I don't believe that to be true. No, I don't.
All right, give me your quick evaluation. We talked a little bit about Michael Porter Jr., but give me your top three out of these three guys. Like, rank these three guys, okay? And we'll leave out Michael Porter Jr. because we don't know where his health is. But DeAndre Ayton, Colin Sexton, and Trae Young. Who's your top three? Like, what order would you rank those guys?
Ayton.
Can we throw in Marvin Bagley?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, all right. Ayton, Marvin Bagley Jr.
So Ayton's your number one.
Yeah. He's just big, really skilled. I think he's a bigger body than Marvin Bagley Jr. I like Marvin Bagley Jr., but I think Ayton is one of those rare combinations of size and skill, kind of Joel Embiid. He's not Joel Embiid, but kind of like that. It's just a rare thing to find guys like that. Marvin Bagley Jr. And then I don't know Colin Sexton as well. I haven't watched him as much as Trae Young, so I feel like I'm being a little biased because I've watched Trae Young a lot this year. He's been forced down my throat.
Yeah.
But I'm going to take Trae Young because I think he sees the game. I think he plays with a little bit more savvy, a little bit more, you know, of his head sometimes than Colin Sexton. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I think he just sees second and third level plays better than Colin Sexton does. And so he'll be more ready to – physically he won't be as ready, but mentally I think he's more ready to play the game at the pro level.
All right. The best thing about – gambling as opposed to just filling out brackets is you can get right back on the horse because you've got a full slate of games today. So speaking of Michael Porter Jr., he was limited in minutes in his game in the SEC tournament. How much do you think he'll play today against Florida State? Similar amount of time? Or do you think they'll let him go a little bit longer because it could be his last game?
I think he'll play in and about what he played, probably a little more. I don't know that you're going to roll him out there for 40 minutes. You owe it to the kid to protect him, I think, and make sure he doesn't hurt himself and risk his future. But he certainly is going to want to showcase. They're going to need him. And, I think a lot of it will be dictated by what kind of game they're in. You know, if they're in a tough one and they can use what he's got, he'll play more. If it's a blowout in either direction, you might not see him as much. But I expect him to play well. I don't think he's going to go off. I think he'll probably be 15 to 20. I don't imagine they'd be super efficient because he's still trying to come back and find his timing. But he's that good where he's going to wind up with between 15 and 20 of them. I have no read on whether they're going to win or not.
Yeah, I feel like it's such a wild card because of his health, because he's played so little. But that terrifies me. Like, I feel like on the upside, he could totally carry the team and get some big buckets. Like, they could manage his minutes and have him play, like, the last 10 minutes of the game. He could be the difference maker. Or he could come out there and look rusty because he hasn't played at all, and he ends up not playing that much. So I'm very nervous about that game. But you know what game I'm excited about?
Tell me.
Our boy Dan D'Antoni.
Okay.
Let's go Marshall, baby. Bird. Let's go. We are. Because they're the original We Are, right?
Yes,
right,
they
Debo?
Are.
Yeah.
See that?
No,
Penn
they are.
State hijacked them for him. That's right. All right, let's get to our favorite segment of the day. Except our girl Hannah is out, so we got somebody filling in.
Here's what's happening with Hannah
/ Debo.
Yeah,
Tom Crean will make his return to the coaching sidelines in Athens as the former Indiana and Marquette head coach is set to be hired by Georgia. Crean has spent the past year as a college basketball analyst for ESPN. Following 9 seasons with the Hoosiers and 9 with the Golden Eagles, Crean will sign a 6-year deal worth $3.2 million annually. The Bulldogs last made the tournament in 2015.
Really pumped up for this, not only from a basketball standpoint, but I'll give you a quick story. I tweeted it out. So I had never met Tom Crean when I was working at ESPN except for one time, and it was after he was fired and he was doing some stuff at the Final Four. He came on my old radio show. We interviewed him, and I talked to him, 5-10 minutes before the interview, 5-10 minutes after the interview, and we go our separate ways. When I was laid off from ESPN about a week after, I get a text from a number. It's like, hey, this is Tom Crean, just checking in on you. How are you doing? And I'm like, hey, thanks. And he's like, how's your family? How's your wife? How's your kid? How are you doing? And I was, I started texting him. So for about the next 3 to 4 months, I would get motivational text, checking in text from Tom Crean on the regular. It was really cool just to see somebody who kind of was looking out for you, checking in on you, and really without any prior relationship. It was just a genuine kind of, he was being a nice guy and just checking on somebody. And I really appreciate that. So now I'll be one of the biggest Georgia Bulldog basketball fans you'll ever see because of that.
So speaking of returns, Tiger Woods is back in action today after shooting a 4-under-68 in the opening round of the Arnold Palmer Invitational, highlighted by a 71-foot birdie putt. Woods is tied for 7th with the leader, Henrik Stenson, firing an 8-under-64 on Thursday. Hard to top that. Tiger has won 8 times at Bay Hill, and although it's been a decade since he last captured a major championship, Eldrick, now the favorite to win the Masters.
Jesus, what do you do with that? The favorite to win the Masters. I thought it was interesting after the tournament where Tiger was asking reporters to kind of temper their expectations a little bit, and he was asking them to reflect on the questions that they were asking not more than 2 weeks ago and how drastically they've changed in that amount of time. I think that speaks to him a little bit and where he is personally, the headspace that he's in, the appreciation for where he's at and his want, if you will, to kind of soak it up and enjoy the ride a little bit more, make it a little bit more fun than it was for him in the past. He's clearly playing great golf, though, Danny. Like, you can't – he's playing great. I don't know that he's going to get it done this week. If Henrik Stenson is firing 64s, Tiger's playing great and could still – like, playing phenomenal and could still be 4 or 5 back at the end of the week if those are the numbers that Stenson's going to hang. But Stenson was pretty pedestrian last week, so I figure he comes back to the field. I still don't want Tiger to win this, though. I want him to be right there in the mix, like second or third, and then go back to the drawing board before Augusta.
I'm totally with you. I don't want him to win now because I want him to win at the Masters. I think the course was very gettable. Like, I think there were a lot of low numbers. But this is, like, I don't think he, until, like, the question is Tiger back? Is he back? I don't think there's any question he's back. And some people are saying, well, he has to win. He has to win a major. No, he's putting up numbers. He's competing on Sunday. He's in the mix, which is all I need to see. Like, he is back. It's only a matter of time before he wins a regular PGA Tour event.
Yeah.
The greater question is, does he win the major? Which I don't know, but I think he gets it. And if you're a gambler, do not touch him at 8-1 odds, because the field is always the safer play. Like, that is dumb money. If you could have got him, which was, and as Tiger referenced, I think it was a week, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, you could have got him at 30, 35-1 or even longer. Yeah, take that shot. But at 8-1, don't even touch that. That's ridiculous.
So if Tiger's going to be back healthy, and you could tell that his golf game is it's back, like, fundamentally sound. He doesn't have to be, you know, the leader going into every weekend, but he's fundamentally sound. He's in the mix. I would imagine, I mean, once he wins one, like, that's all golf needs. Like, we want to see him win, but golf just needs him there, relevant in the conversation, yeah, fighting for tournament wins. And I imagine that if he's relevant for long enough, he figures out how to win. And once he wins a tour event, let alone a major, once he wins a tour event, I would imagine he gets that 18th major.
So from the biggest star in golf to the biggest star in the NBA. So Jusuf Nurkić played his rookie season alongside Timofey Mozgov in Denver.
R.I.P.
Apparently, he didn't learn anything from his bet. LeBron James dunked him into absolute oblivion last night. One of the best in-game dunks of LeBron's career. This one of those times where we wish the podcast was on video, but let's be real. You guys have seen it. LeBron's played nearly 52,000 NBA minutes and keeps doing things like this.
He's a freak. Like, athletically, he's a freak. Look, foul him. Like, why would, like, I, you know what I mean? Like, you're not trying to hurt anybody, but I'm not going to just jump and get in your poster, right? Like that's like a, that's just basically a photo bomb.
What's the worst you ever got dunked on?
I didn't get dunked on. I didn't.
Oh, no. Nemo. Fine video.
I didn't get
video.
There's
That's
like a YouTube clip that says Kobe Bryant posters Rajah Bell, but it's not a poster.
No, like I wasn't running over there trying to, I wasn't right. A shot blocker, yeah. So I wasn't really like getting my hands in the way of somebody dunking. And to my point about Jusuf, like if you're a shot blocker and somebody's up in the air going to dunk, don't hop in that poster, bro. Go get his arm, go foul him, don't let him bang on you. A couple other quick notes. The LeBron Nike box ones, like the first Nike box, the orange ones he wore last night.
Yeah.
They were all right. And a couple nights ago, the 1 foot, did you guys see the 1 foot windmill in Phoenix when he was on the break? That was dumb too. That was a silly dunk too. I think he's taking out his frustrations from his team on the rim.
I would have made the business decision and just gone the other way. Like what Blake Griffin did a couple weeks ago. I forget when it was. There was a break coming down the lane and he like took the wingman. Even though he totally should have taken the guy driving,
right.
I would have liked done that. I would have done a little sidestep. Like, yeah, go ahead. You're LeBron. Get your photo, but I'm not going to be in it.
So Ben Simmons, part of LeBron's agency, maybe future teammate. But remember a few March Madnesses ago when Simmons wasn't playing in the tourney and some said he lacked what it took to be great? Last night, he joined Magic Johnson and Oscar Robertson as the only rookies to record 1,000 points, 500 rebounds, and 500 assists in their rookie season, all while notching his 8th triple-double in the Sixers' 118-110 victory over the Knicks. But he didn't lead LSU to the tournament.
No, he's a bad man, though. I mean, and he's a bad man, and he's a baby. Like, some people would argue that he's shooting with the wrong damn hand. I mean, that's how remarkable what he's doing is. Here's what I'll say, though, and he hadn't won anything. And so I think when you're talking about number one picks in the draft, the conversation isn't whether or not he can notch a bunch of triple doubles in the NBA. And I'm a Ben Simmons fan. Like I don't care that he didn't make the tournament in the NBA but here's what you would talk about with general managers. Like when you're spending a number one overall pick on a kid, it's not always enough to be just filling a stat sheet and a great player. It's got to be someone who can fill a stat sheet, be a great player and win. And I think the jury's still out on that. And I think that's fair. I mean, he's remarkable, and I think he's only getting better, but the jury's still out on that one.
Sixers currently the 6th seed in the Eastern Conference. Derek Carr won't be throwing to Michael Crabtree in Oakland next season. He will be throwing to Jordy Nelson. Nelson spent the first 10 seasons of his career as a Packer. He could spend the next few as a Raider after signing a two-year, $15 million deal with $13 million of that guarantee. John Gruden and company also add Doug Martin to the Oakland backfield.
We're getting close. This is the set, though. So he's getting 13 guaranteed out of the 15 reported, Debo?
Yep.
That's like we're getting close to seeing more fully guaranteed money. I know it's not as big as Kirk Cousins, you know, 80 plus guaranteed money, but that's a good sign for NFL players if they're starting to get more guaranteed money up front. I thought this was interesting because Jordy gets cut. It was Aaron Rodgers' favorite guy. Does it tick off Aaron Rodgers to the point where, you know, when he's doing his contract extension, is there any tension left over there? And I think it potentially could be if Jordy Nelson goes with Derek Carr and John Gruden and starts lighting up teams out there, playing across from Amari Cooper. He won't have to be the focal point of the offense, which I think will open up better matchups for him on the outside. So something interesting to watch there as the season plays out. All right, let's do some.
Hold up. I got something for you. I was listening to Joe Rose, my man, on the way in this morning.
Yeah.
Do you know what NFL player made $28.5 million today with the roster bonus?
Ooh, no, I don't. Don't tell me Ryan Tannehill.
Nope. Jimmy Garoppolo.
Oh, so today was the payday?
Today was the payday.
This is when
baby.
It came full?
28.
That's such a great feeling. I'm so jealous. Like I got one sizable check in the NFL, and it was like I wanted to frame it, keep it. Like it is the best feeling in the world to get that. It was nowhere close to $28 million, but it just feels that good. I mean, it's anybody. It's just on different levels. Like if you ever get a bonus at your work or you get, you know, like something – it just feels good to get that extra.
Big checks.
Must be nice. You know who's not getting any more big checks? Well, actually, he might if he's the voice of Monday Night Football. But Joe Thomas, longtime tackle for the Cleveland Browns, has been an outstanding player. Has started to over 10,000 consecutive games or snaps played. He's been insane. He decides to hang it up, which is bad news for us. You know why, Raja?
Tell me.
He's in the podcast game, and he's doing pretty good. Like, he's got a pretty good podcast. Shout out to Joe Thomas. We respect those. We don't hate on anybody else in this business.
One of three podcasts, I believe, that feature two retired athletes.
Right. We have multiple sports.
Yeah, we cross sports. Who's he with?
They're all football.
He's with
Hawk.
Andrew Hawkins?
Not AJ Hawk. Right. Yeah, Andrew Hawkins. Right. They do a really good job. They're
we
funny.
Also have competition from Carlos Boozer and Nate Robinson have a pod together.
Oh, what? The whole pod?
Sport.
Hey, Danny, we should challenge them to a 2-on-2.
Which one?
me and you, Nate and C. Booze.
Oh, really?
Let's get it cracking.
You got that much confidence in my game?
In your game, yes. Not mine. Clearly not mine.
Who are you guarding?
Yeah, exactly. There could be a severe mismatch there. Oh, I like it. Let's do it. And I want to get Joe Thomas on our podcast because I think he'd be a good guest. All right, so A.J. McCarron was the last quarterback out on the street, really. I felt like he was the odd man out. He signs with the Bills because the Bills were desperate to find a quarterback after they traded away Tyrod Taylor. I don't think it changes anything for the Bills. I still think they're going to draft a quarterback. They traded up for the 12th pick. I think there still might even be movement because they have to find somebody. I don't think A.J. McCarron is a long-term answer for them. So I would expect they might even trade up during the draft. But I feel like A.J. McCarron mentally took a hit because I think he thought he was going to make a lot more money. And then when he got to the open market, he came to the rough realization that he wasn't going to get as much. I think he got $6 million, like $3 million this year. So it wasn't the big payday that I think he was hoping for.
Yeah, that's tough. I had that situation after my stint in Dallas in 2002, 2003, I believe. My agent had told me a number that he thought we should be getting, which is like number one. Like it was tough, and we didn't come anywhere close to it. So that's tough. But what you have to do, and what I had
did
to do.
Did you stick with your agent after that?
Yeah, I did. Because there weren't any offers out there. What I had done, and it was my first realization, unfortunately, that in the NBA, you know, it's pro sports, but specifically the NBA, because they like you can be on the court and only do one job, right? Like, so I'd be on the court and you just defend. Like, we don't want you don't need to shoot. Like, we got guys to do that, just defend. And I did it at a really high level. I started on a Western Conference championship team, like more than half of the games. There were some good players on that team, but no one would pay me any money because I didn't score the ball. So when I went to Utah, I just had to refocus. I had to say, all right, now you got to keep defending, but you have to show people that you can put it in the basket. And then I was okay. Like, people started to, you know, there were some offers the next time around the block and whatnot. But back to AJ, like, it's just tough because you do have to have a little, like, it kind of humbles you really quickly, puts you back into perspective, you know, where you are in the pecking order of quarterbacks or players in whatever league you're in, and then you got to get back to work.
Quick, the good news for AJ McCarron is he'll probably get his opportunity to play meaningful playing time, which he hasn't had. He's had 3 starts. He hasn't played that much. He'll get that opportunity where he can showcase his skills, and maybe he will get paid. He's one of the guys that, and unlike a Chase Daniel who has made a fortune not doing anything, if I sound bitter, it's because I am. I'm not mad at him for doing it, but he's been stealing. But AJ McCarron is actually going to have to go out there and play to earn some of those paychecks. All right, I'm going to run through 5 teams real quick. We'll do a little rapid fire. After the moves they've made, are they a playoff team in 2018? All right, you ready for this?
Yeah.
All right, Buffalo Bills.
Yes.
Oh, you're crazy. There's no way. All right. I think they're going to get worse.
I'm going to do opposite.
Okay. All right. Cleveland Browns.
You say yes. I still say no.
Oh, they're going to make the playoffs next year. It's a big turnaround season. San Francisco 49ers, Jimmy G, $28 million richer today. Are they a playoff team?
Yes.
You say yes?
I say yes.
All right, good, because I say no. I still think they're a year away from breaking through. And I think Seattle's going to get better. I think Arizona's making a lot of change-ups at quarterback. So we'll see about that one. All right, Denver Broncos.
Yes.
Yeah, I think yes, too. I think the Broncos, too. That's one we agree on. Chicago Bears.
I do believe Trubisky in year 2. I think, yeah, I say yes.
Ooh, and the addition of Allen Robinson, giving him some weapons on the outside. I'm going to say no. Tough division. I think Mitch Trubisky's still young. I got to see some more from him.
I want to go back to my number 1 and say no.
To the Bills?
Yeah, I do, because
they're playing the Patriots division.
Yeah.
They're not going to win the division. I mean, that's been owned by the Patriots. They might get a wild card.
No, I'm saying no. I'm changing that. No.
All right. All right, it's Friday, so you know what time it is. We take your questions. Anything off topic, we love them because you put them in our 5-star reviews on iTunes. Make sure you go do that. Leave us that 5-star review. Ask us anything, and we have to answer, as you'll find out from some of these. So, Debo, what do we got?
5-star Q&A.
This one from Drew NLK. So, guys, when is the K&B Canell and Bell merch going to be released? Would totally love to rep the show around campus.
Ooh, all right. So what do we got? We need to hit up our bosses for this one, right? Because if it was up to us, we would have had it 2 months ago.
What are we thinking? What type of merch?
Hats, T-shirts.
Hoodies.
That's all you need.
Hoodies?
What are you thinking?
I need a hoodie. You know I need a hoodie, bro. I come in here, I need a hoodie.
I'd love some hoodies, except it's about to be spring in Florida, South Florida. It's going to be 90 degrees out.
It's true.
I'll take hoodies all day. Like, I would rep some hoodies, absolutely.
We'll
Debo,
it,
can
right?
you push the ball? Can you push the powers that be and make this happen?
Yeah, we can do a collective effort. you might have a little more pull, but we'll work on it.
I get to design the hats because I have a very specific hat taste that I like. I know snapbacks are in, but I like the flex fit on the back.
The dad hats, as they call
them. No, not the. I like the dad hats are kind of the flat ones up top. Like, they're not very high. I like them like a little bit more formed up top.
Drew, we're working on it,
specific.
Man. We're working
good,
on it.
Good stuff, Drew.
This one from DanCan21. Can I please get Raja to comment on how terrible Lonzo's shot and shooting percentage are? And are you guys concerned, this one goes in depth, about Big Baller Brand's Better Business rating and the fact that they weren't paying the company that was making their T-shirts? Would love some feedback on this because I feel like I'm the only one not fooled by LeVar and his gimmicks. I don't know about that, Dan.
Okay, Dan can. I really can't speak to the Big Baller Brand's business ethics. I hear
they're
not.
Better Business Bureau, like there actually is a rating, and
it's awful, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like no one is giving them 1 star. Like, it's all 0 stars.
But I guess my thing would be, like, what did you expect? Like, I never thought, like, the Big Baller Brand was going to be this. I mean, did you? Did you think they were going to, like, crack into the market and be this, like...
I'm actually surprised at how much success they've had, and it's not that much success. I'm actually surprised they've actually got a shoe to market.
That is remarkable, but I expected it to be a pretty poor shoe, and if I'm being honest, I probably expected the customer service and the shipping. I just expected the whole thing to be a poop show. His shooting, Lonzo's shooting is pretty bad. Like the form itself is pretty bad. But what I'll say about shots, Dan, is like they're all unique. They're like golf swings or like snowflakes. They're like, you know, everyone's got a different one, and there's no correct way. Like, I work with my kid right now trying to teach him how to shoot the ball, and there are things that I think are really important in a shot. And when I watch my sons try to shoot it the way I want them to shoot it, it doesn't look natural for them. So then I've got to like scrap maybe one piece of it and just get to the heart of the most important part. Let everything else be their own, and then make sure that their elbow is at the rim and their release is to the rim. And so you can't really always take a guy and make him exactly what you want him to be. What he needs to do is rep that shot out, and I've said it over and over again. Shoot that shot a million times this summer. Shoot it a million times to where, you know, yes, it's an ugly shot, but it's in your mouth. Every time I pull it up, it's in the bucket. It's wet. So, yeah, it'll still be ugly, but it'll be an ugly shot that hits the bottom of the net, and ain't nobody, you know, nobody's going to have a beef with that.
Lonzo shooting 36% from the field, 32 from three right now. This one from Jay Rehor. What is everyone on the podcast's dream vacation?
Oh, Danny, go ahead.
I was actually talking about this last night. I was with some my nephew at a bar. We were watching the Davidson game. We were talking about traveling because they're young. They can't travel. I did a lot of traveling when I was single. I went to Europe by myself, did a little backpacking thing. When I was married, my wife and I traveled before we had kids. My dream vacation, if I would recommend a place to anybody, so I've been to a lot of places. I have not been to Bora Bora. That's a place that I want to go to. But if you haven't been to South Africa, you need to go. Like, that is a dream vacation. Cape Town is an incredible city. And if you can afford it, do it. And do a safari. And I'm not talking about one where you go kill the animals. If hunting's your thing, more power to you. But I did the viewing one, and it was insane. Like, to see the wildlife and the lions and, like, everything. Elephants were I was more scared of elephants than I was the lions. But it was it's really an experience. And the people in South Africa were amazing, too.
My wife, that's her dream vacation. And we had it. We were going Basketball Without Borders, and we had had so much trouble getting pregnant. We had it all locked up with this, you know, camp. We were staying out in the middle of the safari in this, like, five-star. The NBA really laid it out. My wife finally got pregnant, and I had to cancel the trip because I didn't want to risk the pregnancy. I don't think she's forgiven me to this day because we've never gotten back there. Bora Bora is on my list too. I'm the dude though that, like, my dream vacation is always somewhere tropical,
yeah,
somewhere laid back, beautiful water, tiki hut, like right over the water. And then we get there and I'm bored out of my mind, like, because I can't sit still, you know. Like, so my dream vacation now is like going somewhere really cool with my wife. Let her go to the spa and hang out. I go play a bunch of golf, and then we get back together at night and go out and eat and drink and have a good time. I have to have something to do, or like I'm out of my mind.
I'm with you. I need activities. I need stuff to do.
Right.
Hannah texted in and she said Oklahoma City is her dream vacation. this one from one of Hannah's favorites, from Maeve Pitch. What was your go-to horse shot?
Ooh, my go-to horse shot. I have a couple. It depends on who I'm playing with, but I like to shoot from behind the basket, and not just like the one that everybody shoots where you're like right behind it and you shoot it over the top. Like, I like to shoot like threes, like NBA threes from like three or four steps out of bounds and get it over the corner of the, it's a really tough shot. I also have one where like I'm running straight at the baseline from the wing, and I'll shoot it off of one leg. So on the left side of the court, I'll jump off of my left leg and shoot a left leg runner. Or if you want to take it up a step, if you need to make it harder, you shoot it off of your right leg running out of bounds on the left side, and you do it on either side. Eddie House and I used to have some, like, if we need to have Eddie House. Eddie House is phenomenal.
Casa, get him on.
Casa is phenomenal. And we used to have some every shoot around for a whole year. We played out. We played OUT. It wasn't horse. We played out every morning, and they used to be some poop talking, knockdown, drag out, whole team watching type of like horse type of games. They were really cool.
Who got the better?
He'll tell you he did, but I think I did.
I like the one you were talking about. Like, I like the out of bounds, but not from behind the basket, because I like to typically put a lot of arc on my shot, so it doesn't throw me off that much. Like, I like putting a lot of arc on it. But my latest go-to shot, and this is where the trick shot comes into play, is if there's a court outside or in an arena and there's a bench or some stands that are relatively close to out of bounds, I'll stand on the bench, jump off the bench, and make it from out of bounds.
Nice.
Because it gives you added range.
Right, right.
And it, like, it's a tough shot.
Right.
Now, I'm probably, I would, 2 of 10 is probably pretty lofty. 1 of 10 is more realistic. So I'd be sitting there all day and probably getting schooled. But if you're missing shots, eventually I'm going to make that one and get a letter.
So here's my philosophy when I play horse. I like to just make shots.
Yeah.
Like I don't.
I'm a hero ball.
Yeah. Like you're right, but that's fine. Like some like. But I'm the dude who like I'm going to make a million 15 footers off the glass. Like just you know, elbows, free throws, like just different stuff. Because eventually somebody makes a mistake. I just try to make as many shots as I can.
Danny, I feel like you used to be like a through the legs layup guy.
Yeah, I would try that. That was definitely one of mine.
All right, our final 5-star question, of course, as always, leave your questions with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we promise to answer them. I was going to table this one, Danny, but Raja just showed me his list. He wrote it down on his rundown. So, from CB Morning, playing a dodgeball game, 5v5, Danny versus Raja. Who are your 4 other teammates you're picking in any sport? Raja came prepared.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. I gave a little bit of thought to this. Forgive me, because I would have went with all baseball players. Like I would have went with all like super athletic shortstops and outfielders that have cannons. But I don't know baseball that well. So
baseball players aren't that athletic. Don't let them fool you.
But some of those shortstops are though, right? Some of those dudes in the hole that are making like. But anyway, I went with Isaiah Thomas from the Lakers. Really small, super athletic. I went with Russell Westbrook, another basketball. He's my 2 basketball guys. Like. Phenomenal athletic specimen. And then I went 2 football guys, Lamar Jackson, because he's got a cannon and he's super shifty, and Russell Wilson for the same reason.
Ooh, those are good. So I did not have as much prep as you did. So I'm going to go. I can't believe you didn't give your boy any credit. I'm going Steve Nash, shifty.
No, bad back, not fast. Come on, bro. Steve, hey, listen.
Steve Nash in 2018 or Steve Nash in
2000?
What's he going to kick? He's going to kick the ball at you?
He can catch, though. He can throw, can't he? I mean, he's a good
he can throw. No, he's a great athlete.
All right, so I figured quick feet, like shifty, you know, he won't get hit. You can catch him if they do. I must have gone too far back on some of these. I went Michael Vick.
Oh, yeah.
Because
that's
the equivalent of the Lamar Jackson. Yeah. So, like, that'd be a great matchup, like, to just kind of, if you had a defender, like, say, those two go at it. Let's see, who else am I missing? I'm going to get Aroldis Chapman. All right, because he's going to be like the closer in the back who's just going to whip a ball like 110.
He'd be like, yes.
At you, who can throw it over 100 miles an hour. So I'm just going to have like that guy. And then I need somebody with some good hands just to get some outs. I would go with Odell Beckham Jr., but I don't want to have to drug test. So I'm going to go.
This league, this game has no drug test.
This isn't like dodgeball, right? This isn't like Globo Gym.
I'll take Odell. I'll take ODB. I'm taking Odell Beckham Jr. as my team. Although I'm worried about team chemistry now if I have him on the squad. But we have good veteran leadership with all these older guys on the squad.
Put a poll on the Twitter page at Canell and Bell. Whose team would win?
Yeah, dude, I feel like I feel like he's got my man Steve. He loses.
Don't forget who has the better arm out of Raja and I either.
I can catch though. You do have a great arm, but I'm a
catch. I got good hands too. All right, we'll post that on Twitter at Canell and Bell and Instagram at Canell and Bell as well. Thanks for checking us out. I hope everybody has a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the March Madness. Don't get too upset if your bracket gets busted because everybody's in the same boat. Make sure you go download, subscribe to us on at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you can find podcasts. That's where we are. Leave us that 5-star review. We just did our 5-star Q&A. It's a ton of fun. We love getting feedback from you guys, so we really appreciate it. And good luck this weekend. Hopefully get some winners.